Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loride. Coming up, we're going to talk with a former Watergate prosecutor who will soon be speaking in Sarasota. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program. On that program, we continue to discuss the Kavanaugh nomination to the Supreme Court and the Hillsborough ballot question. Should the sales tax be increased to pay for transportation? Here's what two listeners had to say.
This is Melanie in Sun City Center. I've listened to parts of the hearings and literally laughed out loud at Judge Kavanaugh's statement that he never blacked out or passed out drunk, that he may have gone to sleep but never passed out. I know from experience that going to sleep is just a euphemism for passing out. This guy is not only lying to the country, he's lying to himself, and he needs some serious help. I'm sure many recovering alcoholics will confirm this. What an embarrassment.
Comment about the Radioactivity show on the tax for transportation. The first thing we need to do about transportation and education and everything in this state is to stop the notion that Florida's economy is based on growth. And that's where the problem is. Florida needs to focus on developing a better foundation for its economy, you know, trying to attract high-tech jobs, high-quality manufacturing jobs, and those jobs do exist. Let's face it, we need to put the brakes on such frantic development. It's okay to just say no to develop.
There you have two listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Well, our guest today is Jill Wine Bank. She formerly was an assistant Watergate special prosecutor. She was the general counsel to the Army, and she's now an MSNBC contributor and legal analyst. She's had a long career, including stints in both the public and the private sectors, and she'll be speaking this Sunday evening in Sarasota at the Hyatt Regency. And Jill Wine Banks, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Jill, I got to ask you, you were a Watergate special prosecutor. Could you compare those days to the days that we're in right now?
Yes. There are a lot of similarities and some differences. I think since we see the similarities so often, let me talk about some of the differences. I think that the underlying crime in this case is much worse than it was in Watergate, because it involves a foreign adversary and the possibility that someone in America, and possibly with the president himself or certainly his campaign, worked in collaboration with the Russian government to interfere with our elections. To me, that is a very serious threat to democracy, and we shouldn't forget that. The other big difference is with the multiplication of media outlets, we now have competing sets of facts. There is no such thing as alternative facts, despite what Kellyanne Conway has labeled them. There is only one truth. And what has happened in America is, in the old days during Watergate, we agreed on what the facts were. We debated what they meant. Now we don't agree on what the facts are, and that makes a rational debate almost impossible. And it makes it dangerous when the president himself attacks the media, and particularly the mainstream media, as he calls it, which are the normal outlets of vetted information. When people rely on social media, it's a problem, because that isn't vetted, and you don't know who's saying it and whether it's true.
Speaking of the facts, there's a big controversy today over that FBI investigation that may be completed today into the allegations against Judge Kavanaugh by Dr. Ford. Several women who say that they have things to say to the FBI say they've not been contacted by the FBI. And yet on Fox News, we'll say that no candidate has been ever vetted more thoroughly than Judge Kavanaugh. What's your take on how complete this FBI investigation is going to be based on what we know right now?
Okay, based on what we know, it is completely incomplete. There is no other way to put it except to say that this is a cover-up and not a search for truth. Again, like Watergate, oftentimes the cover-up is worse than the underlying crime, and it's the same in this investigation. This is not looking for truth. If it was, there's no way that they would be done by now. There's no way that they would have limited those that they speak to. Certainly you focus in any investigation on the most compelling targets first. As of yesterday, the latest reporting was that Christine Blasey Ford had not been interviewed by the FBI, as also many other witnesses, both to lies that Kavanaugh told, and I'm using a strong word when I say lies, but I would say his testimony under oath before the Senate, both last week and on other occasions, appears to be perjury, because when you testify under oath and you lie, it's perjury. That is a federal crime, and it's something that obviously should be investigated, and there is no rush to judgment on whether he did or didn't. We need to know before he's confirmed, because we don't want to have to go through an impeachment or the embarrassment of having someone on the court. There are many reasons for not confirming him, but just relying on the lies. And some of the lies are big. Some of them are maybe small. It isn't small to me, though, if you lied even about the definition of something you wrote in your yearbook. That's still a lie. And the character that allows you to lie is a character that means you should not be on the Supreme Court. So maybe you wouldn't indict someone for perjury for lying about a definition, but you wouldn't elevate them to the Supreme Court. And that's important to keep in mind. But some of them are important. When he lies about, did he know about stolen Democratic documents? That's a more serious lie to me. When he lies about his drinking, and given the number of people who have come forward to say that it is simply not credible that he wasn't often drunk enough to have blacked out, and certainly that he had a drinking problem, that's a problem. And then he wrote a letter in which he admits that he and all his friends were obnoxious drunks. That's his own description of himself. So to say nothing about what he wrote in that letter about his disrespect for women and his intentions of sexual misconduct toward them.
Well, our guest is Jill Wine Banks. She was formerly an assistant Watergate special prosecutor. She'll be speaking this Sunday in Sarasota at 5:30 at the Hyatt Regency, and this is WMNF in Tampa. I think the conservatives push back and they say, look, the deep state is out to get President Trump and Judge Kavanaugh. This is just a trial run for impeachment. If they can stop Kavanaugh, they'll try to impeach the president later on. This idea of a deep state, what is your take on that?
I don't know where that comes from, except as a means of undermining the institutions of government that have served democracy well for our entire history. And certainly you cannot find any thread that would say that the government has gone after Brett Kavanaugh, also known as Bart. That's how he signed his letter, and also a character in his one of his best friend's books about their alcoholic youth. The evidence that is coming forward from all over the country, from his classmates at both his high school and at Yale, shows that this is really not anything that's driven by the government. And in fact, the government controlled by President Trump is not investigating. They aren't interviewing all the people who have contacted them to say, I have relevant information. The news media is now doing the job that the FBI should be doing by publishing photographs and letters and other information about his behavior in high school, in college. There's a police report of a bar brawl that he was involved in. These are facts. You cannot deny them. And I think we need to make sure that somehow someone in the Senate starts to say facts matter, and we have to go with the facts. Obviously, the president has the right to have a candidate of his choosing in terms of his political beliefs. That's the consequence of an election, which, of course, I hope will motivate Democrats to vote this November in order to prevent further deterioration of our democracy. He gets He gets to have that. That's what he gets to nominate. And I say that despite the fact that they refused to allow President Obama to fill the vacancy for almost a year, which is an absurdity. But he does get to. He does not get to appoint someone who lies and someone who is a sexual misconduct person. So the evidence on both his lying and on his having attacked Dr. Blasey Ford and Deborah Ramirez seems pretty compelling to me. And it's something that the FBI should have taken more seriously and should be investigating on all of those aspects, as well as who paid off his $200,000 debt, what was that debt for, and also his knowledge of the stolen Democratic documents. And by the way, speaking of documents, all of his documents have not been revealed yet. So we don't have the full understanding of his background in government. And they are deliberately trying to force this through before the American public can know those facts. That's simply wrong.
And if the vote on his confirmation happens later this week, maybe on Thursday or Friday, with all these questions up in the air, how fair will that be to the American public to rush the vote through and get it done by Friday?
You know, it's definitely not fair to the American public. And it also shows what a sham this investigation is. All along, McConnell and others have been saying, we are going to jam this through immediately. We're going to have the vote. They're talking about having the vote before the FBI investigation is even complete, even as inadequate and as short as it is. Remember, it was limited in time and in scope. But even as limited, it's not done. And now they're saying, well, it might get done today. They're pushing it through so that they can have their vote this week. Why? There's no reason. Don't they want to know the facts before they vote? It seems to me advise and consent, which is their duty under the Constitution, requires that they have the information to base a rational judgment on. Right now, they are not being rational. And this is not a conservative or a liberal point of view. I would take the same point of view if the candidate were Merrick Garland, who they never allowed a hearing. They never even talked to him. But whoever it was, you need to know all the facts before you confirm someone to a lifetime position.
Jill, I want to go back to those Watergate days. When you were working as a Watergate special prosecutor, did you know the party affiliation of the people that you were working with, the other prosecutors, the other assistant prosecutors? Did you get a sense that Watergate was Democratic revenge against Richard Nixon? What was your sense at the time of the politics of the people who were involved in investigating Watergate?
It actually wasn't anything that I was aware of at the time. I'm sure over the course of working 24/7, for the length of time we did, that I came to know people's views, but I can speak for myself. I was raised to respect the president and the presidency, regardless of who held that. I did not go into the investigation with a predetermined outcome. I waited until the facts developed, and they were unbelievably compelling. They were indisputable. At some point, even the strongest supporters of Nixon came to say, well, the facts are the facts, and two analogies. One is, it was the three top Republicans in Congress who went to Richard Nixon and said, we've listened to the smoking gun tape, and you're finished. You have no more support in the Congress from Republicans at all. We've heard the evidence. You're guilty. If you don't resign, you will be convicted on the charges of impeachment that the House votes. That is the day before he announced his resignation. So it was the Republicans who came forward and said, facts are facts. And the analogy now is, Paula Duncan was a juror in the Manafort trial, and she is a devoted to Trump. She is a loyal supporter. She says that the Russia investigation is a hoax and a witch hunt, echoing the words of Donald Trump. But she said the evidence in this case The evidence was compelling. He was guilty on all 18 counts, and I voted to convict him on all 18 counts. And that's what my hope for the future of America is that the Republicans and Trump supporters will act like jurors, and they will rationally evaluate the evidence. Today's news, the big headline, is all of the tax fraud and tax evasion by Trump and his father. Those are facts. All one has to do is read that article, and you can't just say, oh, well, he says I'm a self-made billionaire, and all I got was a small loan of $1 million from my father. Well, it turns out it's more like $413 million that he got as a loan. And then they avoided maybe more than that, at least $500 million in taxes through tax fraud. So there is, every day there is evidence. And how many witnesses have to come forward to say that Brett Kavanaugh had a drinking problem? Doesn't that make you wonder, does he still? Look at how he behaved last week in defending himself. I understand being angry if you think you were improperly accused of something, but not the way he behaved. That is proof that he is not judicially qualified.
Talking with Jill Wine-Banks, formerly an assistant Watergate special prosecutor. She'll be speaking in Sarasota this Sunday, beginning at 5:30 in Sarasota at the Hyatt Regency. And you can find out more at sarasotadems.com. The FBI report that's about to be given to the Senate is going to be secret. It will be available to U.S. senators only, not to the public. What do you make of that? That's the way it always is done, right?
Well, the information that is given to them, depending on the confidentiality, and of course a lot of witnesses that the FBI has failed to interview, have gone public because they have no other way of getting their facts to be considered as part of whether this man should be qualified and approved for the Supreme Court. It is normal. But normally, the recipients of that information would act on it. Normally, they would subpoena the witnesses. Normally, they would have hearings. And unfortunately, because the Republicans do not want the truth to come out, they will not do that. And because the Democrats are a minority, they cannot do that. They cannot issue a subpoena on their own. Now, they could, and I think it might be a good idea, they could hold a hearing in some public venue. They could hold a town hall and let America see all these witnesses. They can find, I'm sure, the funding to bring them all to one place and have maybe one of the networks would like to have a town hall with all the witnesses who would come forward. Now, in a fair hearing, you would have witnesses who are for him and witnesses who say he's lying. We need to have some way of evaluating the facts. And when the facts are hidden, that's the end of democracy.
Jill Wine-Banks is a former Watergate special prosecutor, and this is WMNF in Tampa. You mentioned the New York Times story about President Trump's wealth. He had several siblings. They all shared in this wealth that their father, at least according to the Times, gave them through tax dodges and outright fraud. That's according to the New York Times report this morning. One of his siblings is a federal judge. Last night, David K. Johnston on one of the networks, the former tax reporter for the New York Times, said that if the judge obtained this money through illegal means, then this federal judge, President Trump's sister, should resign. What's your take on that?
Well, I think I would never dispute David K. Johnston. He is a fabulous reporter. Her life may be ruined as much as everybody else involved in this total scam. My biggest fear for democracy is that, honestly, the Trump supporters don't care about the facts. They like him no matter what crimes he commits. I thought he'd be finished when the Access Hollywood take came out, and when 18 women accused him of sexual misconduct following that, and his supporters don't care. People knew that he wouldn't reveal his taxes, and they didn't care. And to the extent that he's committed any tax fraud, they will say, as he does, I'm just using the tax laws. And in this case, the New York Times has come up with proof that these were probably illegal acts. They weren't just using the Internal Revenue Code in a legitimate way. Everybody's entitled to the deductions that are set forth, but not creating fake companies to funnel money through, not buying millions of dollars worth of chips at one of his casinos, as his father did, and then taking them away. It was a way of loaning money to the casino, which was about to go in default. And that was how he lent him money, was by buying chips and not using them. I mean, this is really despicable behavior that you expect. I started my career as an organized crime prosecutor. This is what I would have expected of my mafia defendants, not what I expect of the President of the United States. Remember, I said my parents raised me to respect the President and the presidency, but I also respect truth and facts. And at some point you say, this person is not competent and should not be the president. And similarly, you would say about Kavanaugh. So, I mean, I'm really sad about this and really frightened because I value democracy. I want to live in an America that values the free press, that allows us to vote without interference, that has a respect for the tax code and all the other laws. So it's very scary to me that we are at a stage where we're just ignoring truth.
Now, I know that you haven't. I mean, I assume that you've read the New York Times piece, but you're not a practicing attorney in New York State. But do you think that there is anything in that story that might be criminally actionable? Is it possible that the Attorney General of New York could look at that New York Times article and say, well, there's some crimes here, and there's no statute of limitation on this crime, and therefore we're going to prosecute?
I would say absolutely there are crimes that were committed at the federal level for sure. I took the bar exam in New York.
Oh, okay.
But right. I do not know enough about tax law to opine on violations of the tax code of New York. But yes, I would say that there are crimes that must be investigated, that could be prosecuted. But really, isn't it sad that we're talking about whether he should be prosecuted? It's a question of whether he should be in office. That's a much more important standard is what do we expect of honesty from the President of the United States? And it does appear that this wasn't his father acting on his own. It was Donald Trump doing this and cooperating in this. So it's a very, very serious problem. We should be saying, well, why isn't the IRS starting on this? Well, of course, because the IRS is controlled by Donald Trump, and he's already interfered and obstructed the investigation of the connection between his campaign and Russia. Of course, he's not going to allow the IRS to continue an investigation of him. Why didn't the American public demand that he have his tax returns viewed by us? Because he knew he was hiding all this bad behavior. And it seems to me that if the Democrats win the House and hopefully the Senate in just basically less than 2 months, in fact, it's almost only just a month, that one of the first things they ought to do is pass a law that says that no one can run for office anywhere in the federal level without putting out their tax returns. It's something we need to know. Now, in Donald Trump's case, I would also like to see financial records because I believe that you would need a lot more than tax returns, which can conceal as much as they reveal. But at least tax returns would be a starting point and might show, as we now know, he went bankrupt a number of times. He was in dire financial straits, and his father kept bailing him out. So this self-made billionaire is not what he holds himself out to be. And I think people in New York knew that a long time ago, and anybody who's paying attention to the facts knows it now.
Well, Jill Wine Banks is our guest. She was an assistant Watergate special prosecutor. She was the general counsel to the U.S. Army, and she's now an MSNBC contributor and legal analyst. She has a huge, huge resume that includes work for domestic corporations here. She's worked around the globe, and she's also worked in the public sector, too. And this is WMNF in Tampa. Jill will be speaking this Sunday at 5:30 at the Sarasota Hyatt Regency as part of the Democratic Dinner. The Sarasota Dems are putting it on, and you can find out more at sarasotadems.com. Just one last question, Jill. I think the conservatives say, look, it's time for Robert Mueller to wrap up his investigation. He hasn't really shown anything significantly. That's what I hear when I listen to talk radio or when I watch Fox News. And yesterday we saw two people, I guess, announcing that they are departing from the special counsel's team. His team is down to maybe 13 people or so now. I'm wondering, when you hear that that claim that nothing has been developed by Robert Mueller, there's really no evidence that Russia colluded, they say. What do you say back?
First of all, look at the number of people who have been indicted. Look at the number of people who have pled guilty or been convicted by a jury, and you will say he has accomplished a great deal. And investigations have a timeline of their own, which is the same thing that we should be seeing in the FBI investigation of Kavanaugh, which is you start with a known witness, and then you say, and who else knows about this? And then you interview them, and you say, who else knows about this? And, oh, by the way, every agent asked as the last question, is there something I haven't asked that you think I should know? And then you find out about a totally different tentacle of the octopus. You find out that there is some other crime or suspicious activity that you need to investigate. And so it takes time. You can't set an arbitrary deadline of, well, I'm going to look at this for a year and then I'm going to go away. Now, if after a year you had found absolutely nothing, you might say, well, okay, I can't find anything. But where you have had as many indictments as have resulted in this case, and not just indictments, but closed cases where we know that the people were guilty, you say, I need to keep looking, and you don't stop the investigation. So it's an absurdity. It's sort of like the language, and I've started a hashtag on Twitter called Say This, Not That, because to the extent that we allow Donald Trump to set the language that we use, like collusion, which is a made-up word, it's not a crime, it's conspiracy to defraud the United States, we when we allow him to call this a hoax and a witch hunt, that's not true. This is a legitimate investigation that needs to continue. And so we need to have the right words to describe things. And I would say we're not done yet. It doesn't seem to me that he's run out of leads. And we don't know what he knows. Hopefully, he will issue a report, and if he gets fired, that the grand jury, with its own inherent authority, will issue a report. And the American public will know what has been either obstructed in the investigation or what the underlying crime was and who exactly did it. So we know the Russians who did it. Now, who did they work with in America? Were they agents of Donald Trump? That's a question that needs to be answered. And so the investigation can't be over. It's his language of alternative facts and him saying that there's nothing there. How many times has he said, no collusion, no obstruction? I mean, I haven't counted, but I know it's in the hundreds, maybe the thousands.
Yeah.
And we can't fall for that language. And we have no rebuttal because in the very appropriate and legal way, Robert Mueller is remaining silent because that's what prosecutors do. You don't reveal it until you have an indictment. And oftentimes you hold off the indictment till longer than you could because once it's out, people start making defenses that fit the known facts. And so you want to question people before they know everything that you know, because oftentimes they will be able to evade the truth by knowing what other people who are telling the truth have said. So we need to let this continue. I'm hoping that many of your listeners are going to come to hear more. It's almost time for me to be in Sarasota.
Are you optimistic about the future?
To some extent, I have to say I'm Pollyanna, and I believe that there will be more Paula Duncans who will see the truth and who will act on it. I also think that the bad things that have happened in America have motivated many people, not just Democrats, but a lot of moderate Republicans, a lot of independents, to say, we need to take action. We have to get out the vote. We have to be informed. And we have to take the right steps to save the institutions that have protected us all of our lives, and not to allow the Fox News to become the state government or the organ of the federal government.
Well, Jill Wine-Banks, thanks for coming on WMNF. Do you have a website?
I do, www.jillwinebanks.com.
Thank you. And so
my events are on there, so people can get information from that, too.
Thank you so much for coming on WMNF.
Thank you. It's been wonderful. I enjoyed talking with you.
Thanks, Jill. Good to talk to you, too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's Jill Wine-Banks, who is a former assistant Watergate special prosecutor. She was general counsel to the U.S. Army. She has a long career in private business, and also she has a career in the public sector. And she'll be speaking this coming Sunday in Sarasota at the Hyatt Regency. It's an event sponsored by the Sarasota Democrats, and you can find out more by going to sarasotadems.com. She'll be speaking at a program that begins around 5:30. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to open up the phone lines in just a little bit. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. President Trump was in Mississippi last night and really lit in to Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, suggesting that she couldn't remember anything significant about her alleged encounter with Brett Kavanaugh. Here's President Trump last night.
I had one beer, right? I had one beer. Well, do you think it was? Nope, it was one beer. Oh, good. How did you get home? I don't remember. How'd you get there? I don't remember. Where is the place? I don't remember. How many years ago was it? I don't know. I don't know. What neighborhood was it in? I don't know. Where's the house? I don't know. Upstairs, downstairs, where was it? I don't know. But I had one beer. That's the only thing I remember. And a man's life is in tatters. A man's life is shattered.
President Trump in front of an appreciative crowd last night in Mississippi. What do you think? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. We're going to listen right now to a video that Nathan J. Robinson, the editor-in-chief of Current Affairs magazine, put out yesterday. This is his take on how we know Judge Kavanaugh is lying. And I want you to listen to this and let me know what you think. Robinson, who is the guy making this video, and I'll send you a link if you want. You can email me here in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. Robinson is a PhD student at Harvard, and he started this magazine called Current Affairs. So let's listen in to his take on why Judge Kavanaugh is lying.
Hello, I'm Nathan J. Robinson of Current Affairs magazine. On September 27th, federal appellate judge Brett Kavanaugh testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee to respond to an allegation that as a teenager he had sexually assaulted Christine Blasey Ford. Conservatives hailed Kavanaugh's testimony as a masterful response to a baseless smear, one that might even change the course of American history. However, over the course of his testimony, Kavanaugh repeatedly lied under oath, meaning that not only should his nomination immediately be withdrawn, but he's committed a serious federal crime. In Current Affairs, I've extensively documented the numerous lies and manipulations Kavanaugh engaged in over the course of his testimony. Here, I'm going to detail a small number of these in order to show why Kavanaugh can't be a Supreme Court justice or really any kind of judge at all. First, let's remember what Christine Blasey Ford actually alleges Kavanaugh did.
I am here today not because I want to be. I am terrified. I am here because I believe it is my civic duty to tell you what happened to me while Brett Kavanaugh and I were in high school. Brett groped me and tried to take off my clothes. He had a hard time because he was very inebriated and because I was wearing a one-piece bathing suit underneath my clothing. I believed he was going to rape me. I tried to yell for help. When I did, Brett put his hand over my mouth to stop me from yelling. This is what terrified me the most and has had the most lasting impact on my life. It was hard for me to breathe, and I thought that Brett was accidentally going to kill me.
Ford's testimony was incredibly disturbing, and any sensible Congress would immediately halt the nomination process and begin a full investigation. But many on the right have treated Ford's own words as essentially worthless, because there are no other eyewitnesses to the attack, and because Ford can't remember a number of specific details, such as exactly when and where it happened. But, okay, how do we know that Christine Ford is telling the truth? Well, we can never know anything like that absolutely definitively, but here's what we do know. We know that when Brett Kavanaugh was questioned about the allegation, he lied repeatedly under oath, and that, in and of itself, is enough to end his nomination. Here's lie number one. To defend himself against the accusation, Kavanaugh submitted calendars that he had meticulously kept showing what he was doing during the summer the attack was alleged to have happened. Kavanaugh said that if you look at the calendars, you won't see any gathering with the people Ford alleged were present when she was assaulted.
The calendars show a few weekday gatherings at friends' houses after a workout or just to meet up and have some beers. But none of those gatherings included the group of people that Dr. Ford has identified. And as my calendars show, I was very precise about listing who was there. Very precise.
But who are the people Ford says were present? Well, here's what she says.
There were four boys I remember specifically being at the house. Brett Kavanaugh, Mark Judge, a boy named PJ, and one other boy whose name I cannot recall.
So Ford says Kavanaugh was there with his friends Mark Judge and PJ. Kavanaugh says he never attended a gathering with the group Ford lists. But when we look at Kavanaugh's calendar, we see that on Thursday, July 1st, he went to Timmy's for skis with Judge, Tom, PJ, Bernie, and Squee. When questioned, Kavanaugh didn't deny that skis meant brewskis. But there are two of the people, Mark Judge and PJ, that Ford listed and that Kavanaugh denied gathering with. Kavanaugh says he didn't, but his own calendar, submitted as evidence, shows that he did. Here's the second lie. Kavanaugh said three times that the people Ford says were there all say it didn't happen.
All four witnesses who are alleged to be at the event said it didn't happen, including Dr. Ford's longtime friend, Ms. Kaiser, and it's been investigated, and all four witnesses say it didn't happen. And they've said it under penalty of felony. The core of why we're here is an allegation for which the four witnesses present have all said it didn't happen. The witnesses who are there say it didn't happen.
But that's not true. PJ said in his statement that he had no knowledge or memory of anything like that happening. And Ford's friend Leyland said she didn't remember the party or know Kavanaugh. But that is actually very different from saying that it didn't happen. Now, if you asked me about small gatherings I attended in high school on a weeknight, there are plenty I probably don't remember, but that doesn't mean that they didn't happen or that my lack of recollection means I'm denying that they happened. In fact, Ford's friend Leyland has said that while she doesn't remember the specific event, she believes Dr. Ford. That's her saying she thinks it did happen. But Kavanaugh says that she says it didn't happen. This is a lie. He's misrepresenting what she said in order to boost his false assertion that all of the alleged witnesses say that it didn't happen, which they don't. Here's big lie number three, alcohol. There are actually three sexual misconduct allegations against Brett Kavanaugh, and all of them allege that Kavanaugh had been drinking heavily at the time the incidents occurred. Kavanaugh, however, has said that while he liked beer as much as any ordinary young person, he was not the kind of hard-partying, belligerent frat boy that the allegations all suggest. An important part of his defense is that the allegations are inconsistent with his character, that in reality he was shy, studious, and religious. Kavanaugh resisted every attempt to suggest that he regularly drank to excess.
In your yearbook, you talked about drinking and sexual exploits, did you not?
Senator, let me take a step back and explain high school. I was number one in the class.
I thought only the Senate.
You got this up. I'm gonna talk about my high school. No. I did my service projects at the school, which involved going to the soup kitchen downtown. Let me finish. And going to tutor intellectually disabled kids at the Rockville Library.
Beach Week Ralph Club biggest contributor. What does the word Ralph mean in that?
That probably refers to throwing up. I'm known to have a weak stomach and I always have. In fact, the last time I was here, you asked me about having ketchup on spaghetti. This is well known. Anyone who's known me, like a lot of these people behind me, have known me my whole life, know, you know, I got a weak stomach, whether it's with beer or with spicy food or anything.
So the vomiting that you reference in the Ralph Club reference related to the consumption of alcohol?
Senator, I was the top of my class academically, busted my butt in school, captain of the varsity basketball team, got into Yale College. When I got into Yale College, got into Yale Law School, forked my tail off.
And did the word, Ralph, you used in your yearbook relate to alcohol?
I already answered the question.
Did it relate to alcohol?
I like beer.
You haven't answered that.
I like beer. I don't know if you do.
Okay.
Do you like beer, Senator, or not? What do you like to drink?
Next one is...
Senator, what do you like
Judge
to drink?
Was there ever a time when you drank so much that you couldn't remember what happened or part of what happened the night before?
No, I remember what happened, and I think you've probably had beers, Senator, and so
you're saying there's never been a case where you drank so much that you didn't remember what happened the night before or part of what happened?
That's you're asking about, yeah, blackout. I don't know. Have you?
Could you answer the question, Judge? That's not happened. Is that your answer?
Yeah, and I'm curious if you have.
But Kavanaugh's testimony here is a big, fat lie. First, many of his defenses are implausible on their face. Kavanaugh was part of the Keg City Club in high school that tried to get through 100 kegs in a year. He was in the Beach Week Ralph Club, which Kavanaugh admitted referred to vomiting, but implausibly insisted was just because he had a sensitive stomach. Kavanaugh's friend and alleged co-perpetrator, Mark Judge, even wrote a book called Wasted: Tales of a Gen X Drunk, in which a character called Bart O'Kavanaugh drinks a lot and pukes all over a car. Now, separate from his testimony, though, people who knew Kavanaugh at the time insist that he's lying. The New York Times found nearly a dozen of Kavanaugh's Yale classmates who all say he was a heavy drinker. His freshman year roommate said he was frequently incoherently drunk and that he became aggressive and belligerent. We have another account of Kavanaugh being violent when drunk. We have numerous quotes attesting to this same behavior on Kavanaugh's part. Here's his classmate, Liz Swisher.
There's no problem with drinking beer in college. The problem is lying about it. He drank heavily. He was a partier. He liked to do beer bongs. He played drinking games. He was a sloppy drunk.
There are plenty more quotes like this, and they matter because Kavanaugh has been so insistent that this isn't true, and he's insisted under oath, and it forms a core part of his defense to the allegations. He wasn't the kind of person he's depicted at in the allegations.
Well, that is part of a video that's out there by Nathan J. Robinson, who's the editor-in-chief of a magazine called Current Affairs, and he put together a video called How We Know Kavanaugh is Lying, and that's just part of that video. Robinson is a PhD student at Harvard University, and I'll send you a link to that video if you want. You can just email me here in the studio, dj@wmnf.org. I think the big question right now is it appears that the FBI investigation is closing, and it had a limited range. Some people who were at the heart of the allegations against Judge Kavanaugh have not been interviewed so far. Maybe they'll be interviewed today. But I think the question is, do we have enough information as the American public to judge whether or not Kavanaugh is fit for office? What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Just want to mention, too, that we gave out that website, sarasotadems.com, for Jill Winebank's speech this Sunday at 5:30. And I should say it says on there, reservations closed. I'm told by officials with the Sarasota Democratic Party that you can go on there and still make reservations, and especially if you say you heard Jill on the radio. That may help you get in. I think there's a big demand to get into that talk. Well, let's take some phone calls and see what you think about this. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And let's go to Melissa in St. Petersburg first this morning. Hi, Melissa. You're on WMNF. What would you like to comment about?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm seething from listening, reliving the hearing and listening to the Trump rally. And I think the question that you posed was, you know, how do we feel about what Trump said? And I'm appalled. I'm appalled at every single thing that he said at that rally about Dr. Ford and her lack of memory. I, too, am a victim of a sexual assault, and I can tell you that I don't remember specific things. I don't remember.
Do you think you put it out of your memory? Do you think that you that in order to survive or cope, that you your brain just said, let's forget about this detail because we want to put it as far in the past as possible? Is that?
That's possible. You know, there are some years between then and now that I think, you know, I can't tell you who exactly was in the room except for the perpetrator. I can tell you there were other people. I can tell you that it was at a Christmas party after party. I can tell you what city it was in. I can't tell you the name of the hotel. I can't tell you, you know, but I can tell you what it felt like being on the floor of a bathroom. I can't forget the cold tile on my back. You know, so there are things that stick with you, and they take precedence over everything else.
Oh, Melissa, I'm so sorry. But thank you for calling in. I think most men, well, I shouldn't say that. I should say many men find it hard to understand, and I'm glad you shared your story.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you. All right. Our phone number again, 813-239-9663. You are listening to WMNF in Tampa. Just in the last 48 hours, talking with women who are friends of mine, they have revealed to me what they never revealed before. They were telling me stories about sexual attacks. One woman, I'm not going to name her, was 17 years old when she was hit on pretty forcefully by a guy who was, she says, 70 years old, and she says she never talks about it. She hated it at the time. She told the guy to stop. Her parents weren't very sympathetic when she came home and told them what happened. I think it's a hidden epidemic. So let's go to Gary in Sarasota. Gary, you're on. What would you like to say?
Well, Rob, you asked the question if there was enough information.
Yeah.
And I got to say no. You know, and we're not talking about 5 years ago, 10 years, or 15 or 20. We're talking about 30 years ago in high school. And there's just so much more to the story, or there's nothing more to the story. And it's not enough to derail it. And my question is this. Let's say she's lying. What penalty should there be against the person that does such a thing?
I think whatever penalty applies. I mean, if there's a perjury penalty, which I imagine it would be, whatever the penalty is for perjury. I think there should be a trial at that point, that you just don't convict her based on, you come to the determination that she's lying based on a trial. So, you let the facts get out. And if she's guilty of perjury, then, the penalty applies.
Well, this morning there was the news on her old boyfriend from the 90s who was with her for 7 years. And he said he had to come forward because of he felt a civic duty. And basically he said four different things that she said. And he said she was lying about him. Everything from helping somebody with a polygraph test to small rooms that she stayed in, always having to have two openings. And so we've been together for 8 years.
Yeah, I saw that. And my conservative friend sent me that link this morning, too. I saw that. There's also a story in the New York Times this morning. Brett Kavanaugh says he never used the term Bart, never went by the name Bart. And there's a New York Times report this morning saying that Judge Kavanaugh went by the name Bart. I mean, I think both, I don't think in the next 48 hours we're going to know the truth. And I think the Senate is rushing to judgment on this. And there should be a calmer process to get to the bottom of this. And I think take into account what her former boyfriend said. I noticed that in that account, his name was not mentioned. But that's okay. I mean, let him come forward. But in this account in the New York Times, Gary dropped off. Okay. In the New York Times, the people are named. Take a look at the New York Times story about the letter that Brett Kavanaugh wrote about the beach weekend. It's in today's New York Times. Very interesting. 813-239-9663. Of course, most of the lines are filled with men. Trying to get some women to call in as I look at the panel. Thanks to Jeff Haynes. He's our phone producer today. Let's go to Joe in St. Petersburg. Hey, Joe, you're on WMNF.
I appreciate being able to comment. I listened to your entire show. And first of all, I'm in an independent, and I love points and counterpoints. I love hearing two sides of a coin. And unfortunately, I have to say that your entire show was one side of a coin, obviously an extreme position only, which I don't think is a wonderful thing. But let me just say a couple of things. In terms of facts, not non-disputable facts, okay, Mr. Schumer, instantly after Kavanaugh was nominated, stated, and it's on video, that he will do anything and everything possible to stop the nomination from being completed. That's fact. That's point number one. He's a upper Democratic figure. He did not speak of due process, of justice. He immediately said, I will do everything possible to stop this from...
But Joe, because we're down to the end of the show and I can't let you bogart the show, but do you think that we have enough information to calmly make a decision by Friday? I mean, do you think it's fair to Judge Kavanaugh, to the American people, to Dr. Ford? Do we have enough information? What the politicians say, okay. We know that politicians said that they weren't going to let President Obama succeed. Let's not dig that up. Let's just try to focus on what's really important. Do we have enough information to do fairly for Mr. Kavanaugh and the American public? What do you think?
Okay.
Just answer that question if you don't mind. No, just because we're at the end of the show. I've got every line lit, and I don't want you to bogart the show if you don't mind. Do we have enough information?
I'll answer that. Let me say one thing, and I'll answer.
You're going to eat up the show. Go ahead.
But you're constantly interrupting me and eating it up.
Well, you don't talk. And please also, talk. Please talk.
Okay, let me. And also, Obama, from his own words, said in his high school, his last 2 years were a haze, that he smoked pot, that he drank heavily, and that he did more than smoke pot because he also did coke and was a part of a very questionable gang. Okay,
Why isn't that
But Joe, we knew that at the time. People voted on that in 2008.
Isn't that odd that it was
acceptable? Well, what are we going to do about it now? He's been the president.
Acceptable?
All right.
It was acceptable then and not now.
Well, Joe, we voted on that, and people took a look at that question, and they thought, well, do we want this guy or do we want the other guy? You know, if you think I'm extreme, okay, I hear you. I mean, if you think that what you hear on this station is name-calling and unfair, okay, I hear you. I don't think that's the case. I think this is one of the fairest places on radio. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001.